The Producers, featuring the most respected international talent in the world of audio production and voiceover. Radio, TV, film, and online. In-depth interviews, industry insights, putting you on the inside. This is The Producers Podcast with Ryan Dreen.
Hello, hello. Episode 81, 81 today. Drew Hall is the guest. Drew can be found at drewthevoiceguy.com, also djgoofywhitekid.com. I will put the links on the podcast page. You know, I could probably, I think I get into all of Drew's titles in the interview, so I'll leave that there. But he's doing a lot of stuff. Basically, CHR imaging producer and voice talent on a national scale and a local scale in Tampa. He's also a mix show DJ. He's got an empire he's building. And then he's a live club DJ as well. So, Drew Hall, he's doing it all. Drew Hall does it all. Coming up next, Rachel McGrath. We finally locked in an interview with her. She avoided me for years. I don't know what her problem was. No, I'm just kidding. She's obviously, she's way cool. And I had her on the list forever. Finally, you know how it is. There's a lot of cool people to talk to. And Rachel's one of them. And we're finally going to get that locked up. We will have her on next. Let me drop a quick mention in for the Imaging Days. That's in October this year. If you're interested in going, I highly recommend it. I thought it was one of the best conference experiences I've had. You know, the venue didn't hurt being in Europe, but for an imaging person, there's quite literally not just nothing like it, nothing that even comes close to it. You're lucky if at a conference, a radio conference, you get one session that might be relatively related to imaging. They might put imaging in the name, or they might have an imaging person on the panel, but you know, I've been pretty vocal about it on my blog. They're pretty much awful. They don't pay any attention to us, and that's fine. I mean, their money is with the programmers and labels, radio group owners, etc. And, you know, that's cool. That's what they do. So the Imaging Days is worth doing if you're an imaging person. Let me say one final thing. I am doing my darndest to get these into one part every time. This episode went rather long, our interview. We had a lot to cover. I hope you enjoy it. I mean, Drew had a lot of cool things to talk about. He's got a lot of knowledge, and we went all over the map. I'm doing my best to keep all of these into one parts, and I've been learning as I've been researching, for example, Marc Maron, biggest podcast there is, right? He had Obama, and if you've not heard Marc Maron's podcast, it is actually really good. Even if his sense of humor isn't quite yours, because he can lean into politics, and you know which way he leans, so if you don't like the left side of the fence, but whatever. When the president says, yeah, I'm going to do a podcast, and it's going to be yours, you know, that's a big deal. I did notice that he releases his shows as, they're 16-bit audio, but they're mono, and it's 22500. They're tiny little files, and you can hear it, you know, when it's just a person talking, really not that big a deal. I can't really do mine like that because I'm featuring demos like you'll hear from Drew Hall. So if you have any suggestions or if you are like way more embedded in the tech of podcasting than I am and you can just say, hey, Ryan, idiot, mix them down like this. It'll save half the space and you'll still sound good, whatever. Let me know. Love to hear from you. RyanDreen@gmail.com. Please hit me up. There's a contact form on my website, too. Whatever. I might mention a little bit more about the tech of podcasting that I've learned in the outro, but for right now, that is plenty for the intro. Let's get to it. I've got a imaging demo, CHR-related, for Drew Hall, but you can hear plenty more audio from him on his websites. So go there if you want to hear a lot more Drew Hall stuff. Otherwise, here he is. The one, the only, Drew Hall.
Someone asked me the other day, so are you just done with music? It means more to me than anybody else in the world. I don't want to put anything out that I don't love.
I'm ready.
New music from Justin Timberlake.
You have to wait for it.
And the minute it drops, you'll hear it first on 93.3 FLZ.
Expect it.
Text JOIN to 97720, and we'll text you the second we play it.
On 93.3 FLZ.
iHeartRadio, make some noise!
Even if you didn't win your way to Vegas, you can still experience the iHeartRadio Music Festival.
Tonight we need to make history, right?
The music.
That's what this night is all about.
Amazing.
The stars.
I've never seen anything like that.
The surprise guests.
Incredible.
What happens in Vegas?
The iHeartRadio Music Festival!
MGM Grand Las Vegas,
where the music of the iHeartRadio app comes to life. Justin Timberlake, Maroon 5, Kesha, Katy Perry, Paul McCartney, Chris Brown, Bruno Mars, Fun, Zedd, just hold on, I'm going home. Drake, a special guest appearance by Robin Thicke, and more. Yeah.
He lurks in the shadows, waiting to attack commercials.
Commercial bad.
He is...
Commercial-free ninja.
Don't mess with the commercial-free ninja.
You take cool.
93.3 FLZ.
All right, another one, and a guy I've wanted to talk to for a while. This is one of those people that I've been digital friends with for... digital as in computers, not hands, by the way. For quite some time. And finally, we get to talk... And then I'll do the interview, and I'll learn so much more. And it'll be one of those 30-minute interviews that I know because he's a tech geek like myself. He has his hands in 57 different pots of gold. He is the one, the only Drew Hall out of FLZ at Tampa, iHeart, and everywhere else. Hi, Drew. How are you?
Hey, how are you, man?
I'm good. The intro started to go off the rails there, so I figured I'd just pull out. But you seriously do have – I mean, we were talking beforehand here – you have, like, sometimes 20-hour days, it sounds like. You have a lot of things happening.
I don't sleep a lot, and that's one of the it's one of the things that comes with the amount of stuff that I've thrown on myself, and it's really me to blame, just like everybody else. If you really examine it, it's you to blame if you're working a lot. But I'm not at all mad at it.
Well, because alternatively, if you were working not at all, most of the time that feels worse. So working a lot is a lot better.
Oh yeah, and we actually were discussing this today outside of this interview. The amount of time that I've given back to the company, for example, on vacation is silly because I'll just if I don't have something to do on vacation, I will be back here, and that's a problem. But it's also kind of a sign that you're doing the thing that you're supposed to be doing, and
yeah.
I don't think that's a bad thing at all.
So are you the guy who can you go on a vacation and completely disconnect and unplug from everything that we are connected to, or are you not able to do that?
I have not yet, and that's mostly because I really haven't tried one of those vacations. I've always been like one of those guys that wants to go somewhere and hang out with people I know. So if I'm on vacation, it's not really me going to, you know, going to the Bahamas and shutting it off.
Yeah.
The closest I got was a trip to Dubai in 2012, and that was almost only because I couldn't get cell service over there, and international roaming is so expensive, but I just finally broke down and bought a cheap cell phone and did it anyway.
Yeah, you got to buy the SIM. You travel abroad, the good trick is to buy the SIM, I guess.
Yeah, well, swapping it out on the at the time it was the iPhone 4, it was a bit of a mess. I didn't bother with that at the time, but I did get, like, at the same time, a ton of pictures and hotel Wi-Fi. There's almost no way to not be connected anymore, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm usually not good at it, but I always at least... For example, I'm going to Vegas. I do that every year at least once, if not multiple. But I have no problem with that trip. I won't leave the phone in the room just because of who I'm with. I might, you know.
Yeah.
But otherwise, I'm with you. These days, it's extremely difficult to disconnect, even from just work, you know, much less any other task. But yeah.
It's definitely a struggle that we've fallen into and put on ourselves with all this great technology, like having a piece of glass in your hand that can bring you the entire internet.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's one of those. It's one of the downsides to the culture we live in now. But I'm, like I said, I'm 100% on board with it. My travel agent keeps telling me I need to do a cruise because that's apparently the only way to get truly disconnected. And I may let her talk me into that this year if I can find time between all of these things I do to do that.
Sometimes it's not even the, you know, it's not the money, but it's not even the time as much as it is finding a way to schedule it. You know, who can take 7 straight days off? That's, you know, in this business.
Yeah, it's very difficult, especially in the world that I live in, to do that. And working ahead just is even harder in this day and age now. So it's a little tougher to schedule those types of things out. Not a huge issue compared to the big scheme of things, but it is one of those things where it's probably something I need to work on eventually.
So let me try and roadmap for everybody kind of the big stuff we're going to talk about, because there's a lot of major categories and then some minor categories underneath, some subtopics. Sure. But you've got your sort of your mix show slash DJ, you know, live DJ life, the voiceover side of your business, in-house imaging producer, national CHR imaging coordinator. That's the official title, I think I saw on your Facebook page. Anyway.
That's correct.
And then there's little, like I said, little subtopics underneath all that. So I guess, you know, first, talk about the way the imaging, your imaging world is structured, as in now you're at FLZ, the venerable, the ultra famous WFLZ that has produced some epic imaging talent, you included, but you're also national CHR imaging coordinator. Tell me about that dichotomy. What do you do for which? How much time do you spend on what? And how do they treat you on both sides of that coin?
Well, I'm gonna pull the curtain back a little bit here also.
Okay.
About a year and a half ago, they also threw WMTX, which is our hot AC, onto me. That's Mix 100.7.
Okay.
And that was when Tommy Chuck, who brought me to FLZ in the first place, decided that he needed to take over Mix and kind of rebuild it. It hadn't really had an identity. And my good buddy Josh Jensen had been taking care of it before with the other staffs. Mm-hmm. And I honestly didn't know anything about that station to begin with. So I'm actually doing three full-time jobs. I've got FLZ, I've got Mix, and then I've got the national stuff. Now, that said, the bulk of my time doesn't go to any one of those three. It's very up in the air. It's very week to week. It's sometimes even day to day. The national stuff sometimes takes a little bit better precedence, especially during contesting times, during the festival, during pool party. Right now, we're about to wrap pool party because the actual show is this Saturday as we're taping this. And that stuff kind of can push stuff on FLZ off, but at the same time, FLZ is so promotionally active that we almost always have weekends. We almost always have a big P1 giveaway going on. And Mix has its moments too. And there will be weeks where I'm not hearing from Kelly Doherty at all for national, but I'll be hearing from John Mayer, my new PD here at FLZ, two or three times a day about something. Or there'll be a week like this week where we're kind of winding down. We're going into the actual event for national, so there's no contesting, but there's little things that pop up from time to time, and those eat into the time that you've got. And at the same time, you've got, you know, John Mayer finding his way around what FLZ is and what we want to adjust according to his wants and his way to grow the station. And I happen to have a PD on Mix that is on vacation this week, but left me a to-do list. So.
Sure.
So in between all of those things, you find ways to give attention piecemeal. And then I'll, again, being in the position I am nationally, you'll also get the stray email from an SVP requiring something. Example, an SVP hit me up this week to do a 60-second beat mix promo for a sales package for a major advertiser. Mm-hmm. And that was out of the blue, wasn't coordinated with anybody. He just goes, hey, need you to handle this. And what do you say? You say, of course.
Let's focus on the station side just for a little bit, and then I'm interested in the grander scheme. But you know, I think a lot of times people are curious if the way that it works for them is the way it works for others. So I'll just ask you kind of rapid fire, but about how often are you refreshing the more general imaging sweepers and stabs that are running on the station?
And I knew this question was going to come up, and my answer is going to infuriate everybody. we generally refresh when we think that something needs to be refreshed. I know that's a non-answer, but it's 100% true.
I don't think it's odd at all. I think that's how most of the places I've been have worked also. But how do you figure out when something is starting to burn or needs to be refreshed?
By listening to the station.
But I think it's, do you listen to it as like a P1 might, you know, somewhere in the P2, P3 range? You know what I'm saying? Because what's burning to us is never burning to the listener yet, you know, because we hear it way more often. But what's burning to the most, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. One of the things that we started here, and I'm not taking anything away from those that came before me, this is one of the scariest, best, most exhilarating seats to sit in at any radio station in history because of who came before me.
It's up there with K-Rock. Z100 will be that seat if Dave ever decides he's done.
Dave's never going to leave. Dave's never leaving. I'm putting this in a recording right now because I'm going to tell you, Uncle Dave, and I love him to death, will never leave. And I hope he never does because he's such an asset to the company and to the station and to the industry as a whole. I hope he never leaves. I hope he's one of those guys that's producing with his head in a jar like in Futurama.
This is just for the very, very, very few people that might not know who we're talking about. Dave Fox, imaging producer at Z100. He's now been on my show a couple times, and he's been there for 27, 25 years? I mean...
I wish I knew the number, but it's longer than I've been alive, I think.
Sorry, I just want to get that out there for people that might be going, what, Dave?
Yeah, I genuinely think that he will be there until he does not want to be there anymore, and I think that passion may actually outlive anything else that may come in the way of that. Now that said, that is the seat, and this is one of those too. I mean, I grew up listening to Eric's stuff.
Yeah, and Eric going, Chase, just for those people.
Eric, I should probably be clarifying all this stuff, and even the Brian James stuff.
Yeah.
Because it's kind of crazy. The station's been around almost 30 years, and it's only had 4 imaging guys in its entire existence. And that is kind of crazy. I mean, it's not as crazy as Z100 having the same one the entire time with Dave Fox. But if you really zoom out on it, it's kind of crazy.
It's very crazy.
Getting back to your question, though.
Yeah, yeah.
when you listen to all the stuff that Eric and Nick did, a lot of it was super creative, and you know it took a lot of time. But it also burned really quickly because it was so distinctive. And just speaking of my experience, I had very little context in the radio station of how that aired, because by the time I was listening to FLZ enough that I could understand how things were being put together, Nick was long gone and asking that, and they were still asking him to do stuff on the side. Mm-hmm. But all of that stuff, like I could recall sweeps that Eric did and put on our, at the time, the internal Clear Channel branding site, because I downloaded them all and listened to them obsessively.
Yep.
But those things probably burnt a lot faster than the stuff we're doing as generic elements now.
Yeah.
And at the same time, that alleviates my work a little bit, just simply because I need to focus sometimes on the larger projects and sitting down and going, every 3 months we need to refresh this category. That's not going to work for the scheduling purposes all the time.
So every 3 months, basically a clean sweep, that really doesn't exist in your world. There'd
no,
be some elements you're going to pull out, but there are some things that might stay on the air, what, 6 months, 9 months, 12 months?
I would even say 12 to 18 months if it really needs
months.
It. Again, it depends on if it's really intrusive or not. There are pieces that go on the air on here for a single day and they disappear and they're hand placed and I handle that. Or it's an idea that one of us came up with. Or example right now that's topical is the Tampa Bay Lightning in the NHL playoffs, and they'll hit a Game 7 coming up soon, and we've got stuff on the air for that may last 2 or 3 days and never be heard again. And that's the flip side of it. It's being super topical lets those things stand out a little more when you have not necessarily super generic, finding ways to make those generic pieces still be cool, but not burn as much also. And that's kind of the way we've always approached it. Now, that said, there are times where we look at the dates on some of the stuff and go, oh, yeah, it's probably time to redo some of those.
Yeah.
But there's no real... You know, there's not a number, there's not an alert in my iCalendar that goes, hey, it's time to refresh your music promos.
And you also probably never say, okay, blanket arm sweep, all the imaging off the table, here's a complete new, you know, you're piecemealing it, you know, one by one, 10 at a time, you know, one category here and there, right?
I wish it was 10 at a time, but yeah, we'll do it category by category. Sometimes we'll just let a category roll for a long time. But FLZ is also one of those where there's weekly refreshes on something.
Yeah.
Whether it's music hooks for the music promos or... You know, somebody, there's something coming down from corporate that needs to be handled, and it applies to FLZ just as it applies to all the other stations. Something like that needs to be edited. It's those types of things that keep it interesting. And then we have the attitude stuff that kind of brings a little bit of the pig back into the radio station, and those things burn fairly quickly. So we have to come up with new ones of those every 1 to 2 months. And again, there's stuff that we have sweepers for when it rains, the torrential rain we get in Florida for 2 hours a day every day. Yeah. And those may not air for a while, and then they'll loop back around. And there's things like that where it just pops up out of nowhere sometimes. And there's really, that's the way to keep the station fresh, is to be constantly introducing new things without necessarily taking all the old stuff away right at the same time.
One more question on sort of sure. the content, the quantifying of the content. I guess how was I going to say? Sorry, I just floated out of my brain there. You know what? I'll move on. I'm hoping this question's easy for you. I'm definitely not trying to stump you. But
okay.
when you approach imaging, rebranding of some sort, whether it just be a refresh or some sort of project where you got to make a bunch of elements, are there certain rules you have in mind? And we're still talking FLZ. Are there goals, top level goals that you're always sort of considering when you're either writing or producing production?
It is kind of easy, but again, you're going to yell at me for the answer I'm about to give, because it's the one that everybody gives and nobody actually does it. And that I just said is really going to make some people angry. It's knowing your listener. It's knowing who you're talking to.
Yeah.
And I don't mean just knowing some type of thing that your PD pulled together with the sales department so they kind of have an idea of who's listening to the radio station. I mean really knowing your listener. I mean knowing exactly what they're listening to, what they're watching, what apps they're using, the type of things that they're sharing, the type of things that they're consuming. You need to know all of those things. And that drives the way we write on FLZ. I live kind of, and it's going to sound young, but if you really think about it, this will drive it. I'm a big fan of thinking in the terms of a 17 or 18-year-old. Not in their tastes necessarily, but where they're at. Because where the 17 and 18-year-olds are now is where the 23, 24, 25-year-olds are going to be in 3 to 6 months. And if you're not on Tinder, if you don't have a basic understanding of how Tinder and Snapchat and Yik Yak and Meerkat and Periscope, if you don't know these things, if you don't know that most of their new music consumption doesn't come from us, but from YouTube, if you're not aware of how Spotify works, you're really doing yourself a disservice, let alone your listeners. You're not speaking in their terms, and you need to speak in their terms, in their language.
You're not a 17 or 18-year-old. I don't know.
No, absolutely not.
So what do you do to make sure, because it's one thing to say you want to know what they're thinking and what they know. But if I don't even know where to start, Periscope, I started hearing about in the last, maybe month or two. And I finally decided to look it up. And it's iPhone only up until, I think the Android, the APK is available now. But the point is, I personally had no need for it. And it wouldn't have, So how do you make sure you're actually connecting to the things they connect to?
Honestly, Twitter is the easiest way to do this. Twitter is such a low-end platform right now that you can find out where those kids are and what they're using just simply by going to any one of their timelines. If you don't have access to your station's Twitter account and your station's Facebook account as an imaging director, you are failing.
That's
and
a
I'm
problem.
Saying that simply because with that, you can find ways to interact with people that you would never be in their world. And it's also not creepy to do that. You can also do it by going to your events and asking those kids what they're doing, because they're listening to the radio station. They don't factor into our ratings, but that's where they're at. And when you find out where they're at, that's going to progress to their parents. That's going to progress to their kids. And oh, by the way, they are getting older every year. And those things, it's really crazy the amount of things that start as 14, 15, 16-year-old white girl culture and progress into the mainstream. Snapchat is a great example of that.
Yeah, yeah. I was going to say, country radio seminar, which I'm sure you just happened to miss this year because it doesn't quite overlap with FLZ. Anyway, there was the guy from the Atlanta Falcons, their marketing. He was saying how valuable Snapchat is to a football team in his, and it was probably the most interesting moment for me, because you can't just know the new platforms. You can't just know they exist, but you have to know how to use them.
Yeah, and you need to be able to not only know how to use them, but know how to use them in context. Know how to use them like a normal person, not like a weirdo,
not like a
dude
brand.
Trying to.
It's
not even just like a brand. If you know how to use them like a brand, that's great because you can kind of work your way around that. But knowing the end user experience is a very good way to know where your listener really is, know where their head really is. Because at the end of the day, that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to get in the listener's head.
Now, I don't know if you guys have ever actually spoken this out loud, but you just sort of set up a pretty solid strategy that I would imagine any CHR station could employ, where you basically said, in order to get the 24-year-olds later, what I do is focus on the 17-year-olds now. And so is that something that you guys have actually said out loud, or is that just something in your head that maybe you're only now just putting into words?
No, that's where I'm at, because I think the real issue is that I'm not getting any younger. And I might be younger than most of the people doing this, but I'm also probably older than 90% of the people listening. And in a year and a half, I'm going to be out of the demo entirely. Not that I'm in the demo as a dude, but at the same time, I need to know where they're at and where they're thinking. And Eric Chase has always been a great barometer of this as well. He's a guy that's probably 20 years my senior, and he's as hip as I am on a lot of this stuff because he consumes a lot of stuff. And he has children in the household that consume a lot of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of where that comes down. Now, have we gone into have we had a staff meeting and go, hey, we're going to talk to 17-year-olds? No. You need to still put it in the context of a 22-year-old, but you need to understand that that's where culture is coming from these days.
Well,
and when you understand that when culture is coming from that era and moving slowly up through the age levels, that shapes the way that I write and the way that at least I try to guide when I'm voicing other stations and they want me to ad lib. That's where I'm kind of moving those things.
And it's either directly or a sort of reversal of, Big Tobacco and the biggest marketing entities on earth, get them young, figure them out there or get them interested in whatever you have young, because then by that time they're an actual money-making demo, you already got them. You don't have to fight for them then. You already got them.
Yeah, and one of the things, the closest we've ever gotten to saying something like that was, we're talking to a 22-year-old at KISS in Pittsburgh. And the reason for that was all those kids are either right out of school or they're about to be out of school. And there's a lot of universities in Pittsburgh. And the 18-year-olds just want to, like the 16-year-olds want to be 18 so they can drive. The 18-year-olds want to be 21 so they can drink. The 21-year-olds want to be 18 again because they don't have any real responsibilities.
Mm-hmm.
So you kind of target it that way. I know that sounds real weird to say, but if you really sit down and think about it, in that case at that time, that was the way to do it. And there is a very large difference between the way an 18-year-old thinks about things and the way a 22-year-old thinks about things. And that's something you also have to understand.
I'm glad we got to spend some time on that. It's always good to talk, theory, the way that the person who is talking to this age group, that demo, thinks. But switch gears a little now.
Sure.
I have to assume there are some strong differences in the way you approach writing or production on a national scale versus, an individual market. But on that side of your job, are you basically doing the same things but on a national scale, or is there just a whole slew of different responsibilities you have over there?
Well, it's yes and no to that. What I like to say about it is it's like producing a house style versus producing your style. And people that are in the agencies, they'll know what I'm talking about when I say that. It's almost like, and I know I've had this discussion with Eric Chase all the time because he doesn't have a radio station to write for anymore. So when he's writing, it's very generic because it almost has to be. It's always good, but it always has to be really generic. They don't necessarily discourage me from getting super weird and creative and high concept with the national stuff. But when I do that kind of stuff, somebody always questions why we did it that way. And part of that is maybe I'm a little too weird for the national stuff, but maybe the other flip side is there's a time crunch going on and we need to get the biggest pieces of it together. Now that they don't discourage creativity. If it's a great concept and they like it on the national side, it's great. And even with me handling Premium Choice, the the writing on all of that stuff, the stuff that goes down to the small market stations that don't have somebody to image, that stuff can be as weird as I need it to be as long as it passes through the filter of my brand manager or as long as it passes mm-hmm. through the filter of whoever needs to approve it. But there are many filters at those levels. Whereas mm-hmm. FLZ, it's a little different. I get the brief from whoever I need to get it from, whether it's Kim, our promotions director, or whether it's John Mayer, or it might be ROM if somebody's out and they need something. And I'm kind of able to do whatever the heck I want. Whereas it was almost, and I don't want to say this because it's going to sound like an insult, but it's the easiest way to explain it, and it's definitely not an insult. Kelly, I love you. It was like I was trying to learn how to produce like Kelly produces.
Mm-hmm.
And that is very tough because Kelly Dougherty is, one of the best in the business, bar none, one of the best in the business. And two, she set a very high bar for me to try to hit straight out of the gate, and it didn't always work very well. And I'm also going to throw in the fact that I have high-level people, not just SVPs or people with P at the end of their name, but people in the C-suites in iHeartMedia listening to my promos and critiquing them.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to really factor in, is this the most impactful way to get this across when you're writing it, when you're producing it?
If I can jump in, there's something that I thought might be a factor, and I think you're sort of getting there, so let me ask.
Sure.
When you produce at the station level, you sort of know who you're dealing with. As you just said, sometimes it's as simple as one person handing you something, you make it, it hits the air. And then I was curious if you got to these major national positions in a company like iHeart, you know, with, what are they at, 900 stations or so.
Something crazy, yeah.
Some of the biggest CHR brands in America, and you're the I was wondering if there was ever a time where you thought, man, this might be impossible. There's too many people to please. Has that kind of scenario ever played out?
Yeah. But that was only, to be fair, in the first couple years of me handling it. Because let's face it, anytime you're jumping into something new, there's going to be a little bit of a feeling out period. And I was not the first choice for this. I was probably the third choice for this.
Now, do you say that because you're just being humble, or do you literally know there was a couple other people that they went after?
I joined the team in 2013. After one had left for personal reasons and the other one was on it temporarily and just kind of said, guys, I'm not prepared to do this. I've got other stuff to do. And I'm not going to name names just for the sake of them. One of them's still with the company. One is actually left for a much bigger company. And those people that know will know. And they're both excellent producers. And they're both much better than I am, at least in my eyes. Because those guys come up with stuff that I could never come up with. And I was trying to live up to that. That was one of the hardest things, too. It was like walking into FLZ all over again and mm-hmm. going, okay, Eric and Nick really set up this place. How am I going to make it any mm-hmm. better than what they were doing?
Yeah, well, you don't want to screw it up, but you want to put your name on it, too.
No, that's it. Well, at first point, it's just don't screw it up. That's the first thing you think. It's not even how do I put my stamp on it. It's just don't screw it up. And that was the way it was for maybe the first 3 or 4 months. But you learn over time. This person is going to like this type of thing. This actually sounds really good and will please everybody. The C-suite has these types of things that they like to tweak in a promo, so make sure you're ready for that. And the other thing is build in time for yourself.
To generally, get the critique.
Get the critique and be open to it. It's not I've never had a situation, whether here or whether in the national stuff, where I go, F you, I'm wrong. This is the way it should have been done. I'll do it, and I'll go, maybe this is going to hit, maybe this isn't. And if it's not, okay, John Ivey thinks this is wrong. Tom Pullman thinks this is wrong. They're the one, it's not my radio station. It's not my company. At the end of the day, if you think there's a better way to do it and you're above me, I'll do it your way. And I'll figure out a way to make it as good or better. I'm not opposed to working through these types of things, but you have to build time in for it. And that's something I also had to learn really early on.
And another aspect I was curious about is how many Drew Halls are there on the CHR side on the national scale for iHeart? You're not the only one, right?
Well, no, I'm going to count Kelly, and there are two of us. And I count Kelly because, one, she's the primary voice of all this stuff. And when you do hear me, I'm going to break a lot of hearts saying this. When you do hear me on the national pieces, it's mostly because Kelly was too busy being the vice president of imaging mm-hmm. to actually be able to voice it. And that's just simply because her position has grown from, I'm the CHR producer and voice of everything, and okay, now I'm a babysitter for a lot of different people doing a lot of different things, and I have to keep it all straight. I really do not envy her position at all. And she can still fire off a badass promo when she needs to. And
is
when
she still producing then?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I don't know that I could name a single piece off the top of my head.
No, but you know she is. Yeah.
But I absolutely, because I've seen her producing. Like, she'll just sometimes say, no, I'll handle it, and she handles it. She is absolutely still producing, but that's not the bulk of her time anymore. The bulk of her time is, it's delegation, and it's planning, and it's emails and conference calls, and I don't know how she feels about all that, but I can't imagine that it's very fun to do versus what we were brought in to do, which is make cool noise, you know?
You're right, right. And just simply managing, you know, crazy idiot imaging producers, you know, there's a full-time job.
And there's a lot of us on the team. Now, I will say this. Since I started on the team as a part-time floater doing whatever. And we have three or four of those on the team now. One, when I moved up, one took my spot. And then we also have a lot of people that can do cross-platform. Like, John Manuel is our rhythmic guy, but he's a very, very good top 40 and hot AC guy. So if I'm swamped on something and we only need one version of it for national, one of us can handle it. And we can pick amongst each other. We're kind of left to our own devices to go, hey, one of you, I need this, figure out who's going to do it. And sometimes we'll just tag team it. I'll voice it, and Miles will produce it, for example. Or Josh Jensen here in the building is available for certain things when I'm not available because I'm on the road or I'm working on a project for somebody else. We have a lot of autonomy that way also, and Kelly's really given us that. And it's a very good tool for us because we can not only get things done quickly because we can all do kind of cool-ish, but we also have a lot of ways to go cross-platform and open ourselves up to new places of producing that we don't usually have in our wheelhouse, you know?
Yeah. The last thing about this, because there's like, you know, like I told you beforehand, we can just blast through time here.
Sure.
You guys have such a great team. Everybody's sort of strategically or just they're just located around the country because that's where they want to be. But it actually makes a lot of sense to me. Anyway, do you get a sense of like a real community being on the national production or imaging team for iHeart? Or do you feel more like you're in your box and very rarely you'll get to interact with everybody else?
Oh, no, I could look at my email right now. I'm actually looking at it, which is probably making my mic go weird. But I can look at my email from today, and there will be four or five email threads from the entire team or from patches of the team that we're all working on a specific something.
Okay.
And awesome. We talk – that car chase, just for the listener's sake, there was a car chase earlier today in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, and half of the list was on that car chase. I sent that link out to everybody. Just because if you're not communicating with people that are like you, that think like you, or people that have cool ways of thinking that aren't like you on a regular basis, you're not doing it right. And our entire team gels really well. I've never had, since I've gotten on the team, and remember, I was a late comer to the team. I don't think people knew I existed before I got on there. I've never once said, this person on the team doesn't like me. This person on the team has problems talking to me. I have no problem emailing anybody on our entire team or even anybody a little bit above, some of the VPs. There's never been an antagonistic approach to any of it. It's never been an us versus them kind of thing. It's everybody is here to do awesome stuff, so let's all do awesome stuff. And I think Kelly has really done a good job of fostering that attitude in the team as well.
I've always said that for whatever reason, the really, really big and sort of damaging egos exist in the medium to small markets. And when you achieve a certain level, you just realize that all the people around you don't have an ego. And you are not going to live long if you do.
No, there's not enough of us to have egos like that anymore, man.
Yeah.
Like, there isn't. It's just straight up, there are not in, I don't know if anybody else has ever said that on your show, but man, there are not a lot of us doing what we do anymore. I'll even say this, there aren't a lot of PDs coming up anymore.
Yeah.
And I'll use this as an example also. Pittsburgh, we were up against a Heritage Top 40. We took that thing out in 8 months or so. I might have been less than that. I still talk to the people that were against us. Some of them work for our company. One of them is one of my best friends, and I voice his radio station in Cincinnati. You can't have interpersonal issues that big with people inside, not just inside the company, but inside the industry, because there's not enough of us to hold those kind of grudges. You can't, there are some places I know that exist where clusters are like, you don't talk to the CBS people outside of work. They're evil. No, they're doing the same stuff we do, just for a different company. And they're still cool people at the end of the day. They still have lives outside of work the same as we do. Yeah. And if they're cool to you, great. If they're not cool to you, okay, well, that's a whole nother thing. But
it's their thing. It's on them.
Yeah. You can't have that attitude about people. You can't be, you can't cut people off like that. It's just not the way. It's not the way to get things done when the industry is so small. There's not enough of us.
Yeah. Never burn bridges. You'll be working with those people in some way again.
And I have. I absolutely have. Yeah. It's come true. And I've only worked in a handful of markets. I'm not one of those people that's bounced around. But I've seen people that I worked with as an intern come up through the ranks. And some of them are in places that are above me now. And I'm not mad at it at all.
Right.
Those people, they did very good for themselves. And I'm very proud of them.
I'm sure you're doing just fine, but some of the new realities of this world, nobody's really just the imaging director at one station anymore. That almost doesn't exist. Had you maybe decided to really take a shot at a couple of these top market gigs, would you be making significantly more money? Do you think you'd be happier? Or is this the path you always wanted and you're glad to be there and then finding your way onto the national scale?
Are we asking what the plan is moving forward? Or are we asking where I was and where I am now?
I guess I'm more asking what the plan is moving forward, but I'm asking it in such a way that, have you ever thought about it? Or is there a time where you think you'll go, okay, now I'm ready to gun for a top five market gig on the national,
Well, okay. So let's back up a little bit. I went to Penn State, which is not a cool thing to say anymore. Thank you, Sandusky. By the way, I was there for that whole thing. It was crazy. That's a whole other podcast, though. When I was there, and just because of the way I worked at the time, I made a 2-year after graduation, 5-year after graduation, and 10-year after graduation plan.
Okay.
I'm going to be here 2 years out. I'm going to be here 5 years out doing this. I'm going to be 10 years out. I'll be here doing this. FLZ was in year 10. And I got it in year 6.
Mm-hmm.
That screwed me up for the rest of the 10 years because I didn't know where to go from there.
So you hadn't made a year 15 plan that you could then
No, I had not gone. I had, 15 and 20. This is the funny thing about this. When you finally get into what you wanted and you find out how the sausage is made, sometimes you don't really want it anymore.
Yeah.
And there are, and I'm going to bring up names, and don't yell at me, guys, for saying names. On my 15, I had a 15, and those stations were Z100, Kiss LA, and Kiss Chicago. I'm voicing Kiss Chicago, so I might as well be there already. I'm not producing it, and I love those guys to death, but they don't have any space up there. Steve Dubbs is doing an amazing job there, and he's doing it from Miami, and that guy deserves all the money that he's getting. LA, I actually have tried to go to LA a couple times. It hasn't worked out, and better people than I have gotten those gigs. And Miles is a great example of that. And I think he is going to really shake up Kiss, and I think he's really going to destroy people. I mean, he's gonna come out just firing. And the stuff he's already done is insane. The question as to where is next, I have no idea. And that's kind of the crazy thing. And I've had some short talks with some people about this before, but I haven't had a ton. And it's one of those things that I think I'm going to have to fly to a city with somebody I know and sit down and get a gigantic steak or two and actually talk about these things for 2.5 hours, because it's one of those things you can't really you can't do over email. You have to really sit down and talk it out. I don't know what the next move is, to be completely honest. I don't.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's...
And I'm also not going to presume that I would... Like, again, going back to Dave Fox, God forbid he ever leaves, because I really, really do not hope he goes anywhere. I want him to be there as long as he wants to be there. But if Z100 opened up, and I've said this before to the people involved, I don't think I would get a look for that. I think there are at least two other producers in the U.S., if not in the company, that would get a look at that before I would. And it's not because of political. It's not because I'm in a station that really doesn't need to have any more change, or that it needs to be as stable as possible because it bills so well. It's simply because they're better producers. And if they wanted it, they would probably get it. And and to those people, I would say that to their face. I'm not going, you know, I'm not trying to be humble here. These are people that are legitimately ready to go. And that the same thing happened in LA. Miles was ready to go, and he is one of the best producers. And there were a lot, I'm told there were a lot of people in the running for that. And he won out because he is amazing, and he 100% deserves that job. To answer your question, though, I really don't know what's next.
Yeah, that's okay.
And that's one of those things where you almost can't second guess it. You know, it's one of those, do you really want to try something and get out of here? And I will also say this, Tampa, for all the shortcomings it has, is a very lovely place to live. And if I was stuck here for the next 10 years, I wouldn't be super angry about it.
Well, if I can transition just kind of maybe to the final-ish topic, the mix side of things. Not obviously. I don't really know. I've actually never been to Tampa. But, you know, doing what you do in the nighttime, which I'm assuming you're still regularly DJing relatively major club events. Is that safe to say? Or?
Yeah, it is. It's fallen off a little because everybody's a DJ now. I think we've seen that. because when that happens, the bottom drops out, and I know what I'm worth. And sounding arrogant, but it's a time versus return on investment. There are a lot of gigs that I'm turning down in the Tampa area, one, because of contract issues, but two, because they're not worth the time versus the money. But I am playing out pretty regularly. I'm on like the second tier of the iHeart national DJ team. So I get put up for events for corporate clients of iHeart every once in a while. And then I do tour quite a bit. I have a lot of gigs and a lot of relationships with people outside of Tampa. And the majority of my gigs lately have been outside of Tampa Bay.
Yeah. Okay. So that leads me to the second title I saw, creative director / nightclub DJ for iHeart Media. This is a world I know very little about that iHeart actually pays or sanctions or sponsors, or in what capacity are you an iHeart, nightclub DJ?
It's not, that part is kind of a misnomer on there, and it's not easy to correct when you're looking at it on Facebook, which is why Facebook is kind of awful. It's not that iHeart is sanctioning us. It's that we appear on iHeart stations, and we do work for them when we need to. Great example was the first year we really did the ultimate pool party, the very first year. It wasn't the one where it was just Katy Perry. It was Calvin Harris when Feel So Close was big, Gym Class Heroes, Maroon 5 played. I was actually one of the three DJs they had opening for that. And that consisted of a daytime or a nighttime arrival party on Friday night, a daytime party on Saturday. And then there's video actually on my website of me playing during the opening of the actual show on that Saturday night.
Is this on DrewTheVoiceGuy.com?
No, that's actually on DJGoofyWhiteKid.com, which
is the
other.
Okay, because we've got DrewTheVoiceGuy.com, which obviously is your Lego creations. No, your voice site. And then DJGoofyWhiteKid.com. So I didn't get those out at the beginning. I get them out in the intro, but anyway.
That's fine. Yeah. But it's not that, and what they do is they facilitate. And by that I mean, hey, we need a DJ to do something that's happening with an iHeart event. Can you do it? Or this major advertiser is doing something around one of our events, like the festival. We don't want one of our main guys, Pro Style or DJ Ski or DJ Obscene, to do it. Can you handle it?
Those are the main iHeart guys?
There's a variety. From what I know, and this roster changes all the time. It's Pro Style in New York, DJ Ski in LA, DJ Obscene in Miami, and DJ Evie, who was in Cleveland and now kind of commutes between Cleveland and LA. I got to ask him where he's living now because I honestly don't know that well.
Yeah.
And then DJ Riddler is kind of there, kind of not, because of his association with CBS. It's kind of, I don't know what the deal is there, but I know he's still on Z100 and KTU in New York. I'm on that list kind of near the bottom. And then there's one or two others out of the LA branch, and couple of the other kids out of the New York branch too. The other flip side of that is I'm also on the iHeartRadio Spin Cycle channel, which is all mixed show all the time. And that has me and the guys, Nate Tyler and Gonzo from Columbus, and Maurice Halstead out of, I want to say, Detroit or Chicago. I can't remember which, but I should know that because he's actually a really cool dude. And then Evie is on there. Pup Dog from Boston is on there. And those guys are kind of the second tier, where if there's a special thing, and they all kind of have their own things going on in their own markets as well. But if there's something special and iHeart wants something in that market, they'll call on us for that.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, and then there's the other ones that are syndicated on the other shows, like the premiere shows, like Dirty Elbows, who's here in Tampa with me. Kid Leo's also here in Tampa with me. Between the three of us, we have most of the East Coast and some of the West Coast covered. Elbows is on the Club Kane show. So he's on 120, 130 stations. And then J-Mac is in Orlando, and he's on Saturday Night Online with Romeo. So there's quite a few of us that are around.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that, but we all kind of do our own things, and we have the iHeart umbrella helping us, and we will help the iHeart umbrella in return.
Just I can help educate myself and others who are curious about this side of it.
Yeah.
You know, I always like to bring up money angles. I mean, you don't need to get specific, but can one make, I kind of know the value of syndicated products just based on where I work. And I know generally, you know, what a 4-hour daily talk show can make if you're clearing on X stations and, you know, but as a mixed show DJ, you know, depending on your scale, could you make a living at that?
Well, just to clarify it, it's the way I do it is not through iHeart, believe it or not. My syndication, which is it runs on the iHeart Spin Cycle channel.
But it's with Grooves,
without the syndication commercials. Yeah. My partner Grooves, who's now the PD at your station, KTFM in San Antonio.
Absolutely.
He and I started that syndication company almost right out of school in 2007, 2008, somewhere around there. Mm-hmm. And we, for the first couple of years, we made almost no money. A lot of it was exposure and going to these markets and playing club gigs and getting paid that way. And then the rest of it was getting a deal with United Stations because Premier didn't want us and Westwood One already had a competing product. And we've grown that. Is the money great? Can you make a living if you really hustled? Yes. I'm really fortunate in that Grooves does a lot of the, hey, put us on your station, and he knows everybody.
Yeah.
But I also, I have some of that as well, and I also have the iHeart connections, which helps us a lot. It's not quit your job money.
Okay.
But it's money that you could subside on if you really needed to. And it's enough money that I would miss it if it were gone.
Then on the other side, you know, again, just to kind of give people a ballpark on the revenue, and I want to get to voiceover career still, since you gave me unlimited time. We're going in that direction.
Yeah, let's go as long as we need.
You know, as a club DJ, when you're just out doing the events, obviously, I would assume it's kind of like anything, music, stand-up comedy, where if you get these corporate events, you're just always going to make a lot more money. But, you know, you work a couple nights a week, maybe. Is that something you quit your job over? Or is that, again, something that is good cash?
Well, yeah. I hate to keep going back to Pittsburgh, but that was a great example of then versus now. That was before everybody was a DJ. It was before laptops. The first laptop I ever saw in use was actually DJ Scribble playing at the MLB All-Star Party at Heinz Field that my friend DJ Bonix played. We showed up with 5 crates of records, and he showed up with a laptop, and our minds were blown. Since then, the bottom has dropped out because it's so easy to do what we do with a laptop versus what we had to do before.
And Paris Hilton does it, so.
Yeah, and it's much less income intensive. It's much less capital intensive because downloading a song, especially from promo sites now, is not nearly as expensive as putting on, like going to an actual record store and buying the vinyl, which is where I was at up until about 2007, 2008.
Mm-hmm.
Back in the Pittsburgh days, I had a Wednesday night club gig that was not on the air, a Thursday night that was on the air, a Friday night afternoon gig, a Friday night gig, both on the air, a Saturday night gig on the air, and a Sunday night gig on the air, paid with a talent fee, not through the club necessarily, but the club was fronting the talent fee as a hard cost.
Uh-huh.
And I was basically doubling or tripling my salary in Pittsburgh.
From your station salary.
From a, yeah, tripling. It was between 2 and 2.5 times.
Okay, yeah. I mean, I think people can generally gauge you had to be making at least 30,000, 40,000 maybe. So then, yeah, that's real money.
And that was the problem with that was it was cash mostly. So, or it was even worse, it would be a check, which meant you get a 1099, and then you have to account for Uncle Sam at the back end. Mm-hmm. But that kind of money now only comes with corporate events or city events. Or major advertisers.
Yeah.
Unless you're at the heap, and I mean like, if you're a pro style or you're an EV, or and I'm not even talking about upper echelon. We're not talking Calvin Harris, Martin Garrix, Tiesto levels. We're talking like the real workhorses out there, the DJ Scenes of the world. The J. Espinoza is another one out of San Francisco. I can imagine that they're making probably 2 or 3x what I was making when I was playing out regularly in Tampa, but it's nowhere near the upper levels of Festivaldom and the Vegas residencies and things like that. Don't think there's a lot of money in there, but you also have to remember that those dudes I just mentioned have been at it for 10, 15, 20 years, all of them,
sure.
From Calvin Harris down to Jay. Jay's been around making records longer than I've been producing imaging, and he is amazing, and I think he's underpaid for what he's doing, and not knowing exactly what he's getting paid. Whatever he's getting paid is not enough.
Now, were you putting... Okay, I'm just making the assumption that you actually are producing your own music, not just spinning other people's tunes, right?
The real thing there is I don't have a ton of time to produce, and people and DJs all the time in town will see me out, and they'll ask me, hey, what are you doing? I know you haven't been out playing much. Are you in the studio working on stuff? I'm like, yeah, I'm working on stuff. And like, do you have anything you can show me? It's like, you're not going to be real interested in it because it's all iHeartRadio Music Festival promos. And they listen to it and they're cool. I'm like, oh, you do those. But I haven't had a lot of time to produce anything in the last 3 or 4 years that's been of any use, because a lot of it is, it's either re-edits of a song or, you know, adding drums or adding a line where it needs to be or adding an intro where it needs to be. And some of that stuff will actually, like, you'll see some of that stuff floating around from the labels every once in a while. I'll feed it to one of my guys at the label going, hey, I think this might be a better way to arrange this. And they'll send it out to the DJs. And that culture is still very much alive. And then there's people like Mike D in Hawaii, who's, I think he's moving to the mainland soon. And he's a really good friend. And he's actually the one that made the edit of the Gautier, somebody that I used to know that everybody played.
Yeah. So how does that work? What kind of credit does he get on that? When that song's already huge, obviously Gautier wrote it. What does he get when his mix starts getting spun everywhere, clubs and on radio?
Oh, that's the remix end is a little different because a lot of that is flat fee. The label goes, here's what I have. Can you get me a remix? And he goes, yes or no. And they send him the stems and he gets a flat fee for it. And if it goes, it goes. If it doesn't, it doesn't. Because 90% of the stuff that we would do, whether it's me or Mike or somebody else, even if it's original production, it's not going to be the original song. So they're not getting writing credit on it unless they're in on the base level getting writing credit.
No, but there's no performance royalty on any platform. There's nothing else.
No, because the actual people that get the performance royalty are the ones that are registered with ASCAP, EMI, or CSAC, and that's going to be the original producers. Yeah, so unless it actually comes out as an official remix and it's registered with ASCAP, BMI, or CSAC, you're not going to see any money above that for it. Now, that's how it works in the U.S. I think it might be a little different in some countries overseas. But there's two things that Mike got out of that. Well, actually, three. One, he got a check from the label, which is always good. And especially getting the money up front versus not knowing what you're going to get on the back end. Because he might put out, I mean, that kid puts out 30 remixes a year. One like that goes huge. That's an anomaly. I'm not pooping on his work at all. But at the same time, that's not the norm. Two, you get the scorn of Gautier for ruining the song, and that's a direct quote. And three, you get pretty much national recognition by all the people that are playing the song because your name is in the title somewhere. And the labels are not shy about that. If you do a good edit of a song and they send it out everywhere, they'll tell whose name it is, even if you've never heard of the person.
This is all fascinating. The people that are listening that are interested in this, I apologize if you're not, but I'm fascinated, and you've got your hands in so many sides of the business. I was always curious, obviously there is a certain level of talent that, you know, labels might just have on the top of their list. You know, I'm going to go to so-and-so, you know, Oakenfold's doing my remix. I'm a little dated, obviously, but, you know, he's doing
he's
my
still
remix.
Around.
Here's the stems. Yeah, yeah. No, he's not dead. So my point is, how do you get to be the guy that they will trust with the raw stems and say, okay, you're making the remix to the Katy Perry song or, you know, whatever big monster hit?
Those are very tough to get. If you're talking, let's just use Katy Perry as an example. One,
sure.
You have to really have done the low-level people that you've never heard of before. You need to be doing the Pia Mias and the Gautiers of the world that may never have a second song, you know? The second one is to not be a dick about it. If they're giving you the stems, because honestly, it's not that hard to get stems for a remix. You hit up the label. If the label people are cool with you, they'll give you the stems. As long as you're cool and they think you're going to actually do something good with them. I'm not telling imaging guys to go ask for stems. Usually what I'll ask for is an acapella and the instrumental, and I'll go from there. I don't ask for full Pro Tools sessions. Now, Mike can do that because he's that dude. And he's got the trust of those people. But the other thing is, don't be a dick. And when you get those things, share them all over the world. Because that's an easy way to really piss people off. And that's what some people have done, and they don't do remixes anymore. Those are kind of the three things, but it's really a trust issue with the label. And there's a ton of people. I say that, but at the same time, Justin Blau is a fairly good friend of mine now, and he started out basically making mashups in GarageBand of stuff and playing it on Turntable.fm when that was a thing. And now he's a touring DJ making his own edits plus his own originals. And he's a very accomplished musician, but he's only been in the game 2 or 3 years, and he's young, and he's really young. So I it's one of those things where you can, there's multiple paths to get there. It's just getting the trust of the labels to give you the opportunity to get the Katy Perry stems or the Madonna stems or something like that.
I have to swing it back around to radio imaging because that's what I do. And really, ultimately, I was going to bring it here. What makes you better? The imaging production in the studio makes you a better mix DJ or vice versa?
I think I'm going to sound like Uncle Dave Fox when I say this. I think having the club DJ background, because I was that first, and I didn't, when I started as a club DJ, I had no idea what this stuff was at all.
Yeah. I've had a few of those on the show.
Yeah. I think that helps because it teaches you rhythm, it teaches you arrangement, it teaches you flow, it teaches you construction on a bass level, musical construction on a bass level. And knowing those things versus people that don't know those things is infinitely more useful. Everybody hears it where you hear a bad edit on a TV show or a commercial and just go, that's an awful edit. I could clean that up in 2 seconds, but nobody ever does.
Yeah.
I think it's changed me a lot as a mixer because I know how radio works and I know how listening works on that on radio. And playing to the radio is way different than playing to a club. 100%.
What are some of the major differences?
Radio, there is no time for BS. There's no time for very long instrumental pieces. It is very much get in, get out, hold their
attention. Transitioning has to be a lot faster.
Your traditions, not only do they have to be faster, but they have to be cleaner. They have to make more sense, but they still have to identify what's being played. Now, there are cases where that goes out the window. If you're doing a specialty dance show, for example, like the Beatport show, or you're doing something that is clearly not supposed to be on-brand appointment listening, then you can get away with some stranger stuff. And I am one of those people that gets away with stranger stuff simply because you have to know where to put it and when to put it.
Uh-huh.
But it's clubs go way longer. And especially for those of us that aren't, getting, 20 grand for an hour set, you've got to plan a night out. And planning that night out really, really teaches you how to get to play, how to get in and out of things a little better than somebody that normally is just, putting songs together on a playlist in iTunes. But you have a lot more time in a club. So the radio, I've got two mixes on FLZ that are 25 minutes apiece, and I've got to get to however many songs versus a four-hour night at a club. I can get to all those songs twice if I need to, but play out the night as I need to. It's it becomes like a micro version of what you're doing, but a lot more focused. It's a lot more focused is what I was really trying to say there.
I wanted to talk on the tech side again. We'll get to the voice stuff here in a minute, I promise.
Yeah, it's fine, man.
Back in the day, you know, I think some of the intangibles about good mix or even good imaging production was all the musicality of it, you know, keeping things on tempo, you know, transitioning on downbeats, but then mixing in key. And I think the real talented people could kind of do that in their head, and they focused on it before everybody else did. You know, everybody else didn't really think about, well, wait a minute, is this in A? Is this in A? Shouldn't I match that up? Or does A mix with C? You know. So Now that all these tools exist, people can pay a lot more attention to that, and it's a lot easier. How have you addressed that, you know, with your mixes, either in the imaging or in the DJ sets? What tools do you use to prepare your mixes? What, you know, mixed in key is just one that stands out to me. But
that's the one everybody will say, and that's the easiest one to think about because the Camelot wheel really changed the game. I actually was not familiar with key mixing until about 10 years into mixing. I've been mixing for 17 years now, I think. I'm going to backtrack and think about it, but it's been something like that. I started when I was 14. But I, for the first at least 10 years of me mixing, I had no idea how to mix in key or what even that meant. And it's just because the way I learned coming up was BPM was king. If you could get from one place to another, great. If it sounded weird, then you knew it sounded weird. You never did it again. That was all we knew. And then mixed in key kind of changed the game. I do use that and I run everything through it. I don't always rely on it though, because there are times in the radio world where the setup of the songs, the way you schedule them is more important than them mixing in key. On the imaging side, I really tend not to do a lot of stuff that requires that because you'll end up with here's the major concert promo. Here's all the acts that are in it. They need to be billed in this order. You're not going to be able to do anything with that. I'm sorry. Like, you could pitch up songs. It's just going to sound weird.
Let's say you have like you just said, a show. There's four major acts. Do you spend any time at all pitching things up and down and taking, you know, tempos left or right just to get them closer? Or do you just don't even bother because it's not worth it?
I'll do this. I'll answer this in a way that I bet you weren't expecting. What I will actually do, and this is one of the biggest pet peeves, and Eddie Bishop, who I interned under at Q102 in Philly, and Franklin McAdam, who was a production director. Now he's a salesperson. He went to the dark side. These two guys pressed it into my brain from a very early age. What I will do is pitch any piece of a song that airs in imaging to this way, to the pitch that the station runs it at.
Which is like 2% faster or something?
Sometimes, I'm not going to give away FLZ because we're in a competitive situation.
That's fine.
Let's have a fun story real quick. Again, let's go back to Pittsburgh. KISS Pittsburgh, when I got there, was pitching at 2%. So was B94. I started doing everything at 2%. And when I'm mixing on that station, you pitch it to 2% and you leave it there instead of playing it at 0 because it's going to sound weird versus the rest of the radio station. We slowly started pitching up to see what B94 would do, and they started matching.
Yeah.
And eventually we we got up to 4%.
Okay.
Which sounded insane, and it still does when I say it. But we were playing our playlist at 4% the entire day. But then when I would have to do music promos, I was pitching the songs up to 4%. Because if they played next to a song for some reason, it would sound slower. And I'm really anal about that. And it was even to the point where until I started getting calls from the promoters going, what the hell is that? I would actually take, when I was doing, because in Pittsburgh, I was production director also. I was doing spots. I would take concert promos from artists that we played and pitch them up to match the radio station because it sounded weird when it would go song into Jock Talk into that as the first thing.
A concert spot that you produced in-house, though, right?
No, concert spots that we got from agencies. Yeah, agency concert spots.
So the voice gets pitched up 4% too?
Yeah, it was tough. It was really tough.
I would have been upset.
It was kind of the Wild West back then, and I probably would not do that now. I don't handle spots here, but I probably wouldn't do that anymore. But I will, if I'm doing a music promo or a music kickoff and it has hooks in it, I will pitch it to the radio station, and I will pitch it to make, and I'll do that even where we have little pieces of songs that are beds even. I'll match the beds if I need to, because it's one of those things that I hear it and it just sounds wrong.
Talk about gear just real quickly. In studio, are you Mac? Are you on Pro Tools? What do you use for your doing your mix shows versus making imaging production? What kind of software, et cetera, all that?
So this is going to be a long answer. So I have...
Oh, boy.
I'm sitting in front of a PC right now that I use solely for Adobe 1.5 and Microsoft Office and web browsing. And the reason I do that is because if I need to send things to Sales Goons on my Mac, for some reason, none of the attachments ever go through properly. And with the advent of Dropbox and SpotLocker and things like that, it's a little easier. But I just got in that mode where if I sent it from a PC, something would mess up. So I always had, or if I sent it from a Mac, excuse me, something would always mess up. So I sent it from a PC. And that also keeps me kind of separated. Across the room right now, though, is my Mac, which is an Intel. I'm going to pull it up real quick. Hold on. I don't even remember the specs on this thing. I'm an awful, awful Mac owner.
Is it old? Like you don't really use it very often, or what?
No. The Mac is my primary DAW. I do everything in Pro Tools Let me back up. I don't do everything in Pro Tools. Pro Tools is my main DAW. And that's an 8-core Xeon 2.8. Mm-hmm. It's got 16 gig of RAM. I maxed the thing out. It is one of the older ones, and this is where people are going to get weirded out. I'm still running Pro Tools 10 HD. A little bit of the story on that. When Eric Chase left and Nick Daly left, they left a PowerPC Mac with a full HD3 rig in it. And that is a dream until they switched to Intel Macs. So I had to switch over the cards and pay a significant amount of money to have them switch those cards to use an Intel Mac versus a PowerPC Mac. And I've been on this machine ever since. Because one, they won't buy me a new machine because what do I need a new machine for? It's running like a champ right now, even though it's a 2010. But two...
Man, mine's an 09. I love it.
The upgrade path, though, has changed because, as you know, Pro Tools went to HDX. And everybody that's using AAX plugins that sound like the real thing on an HD system, they're celebrating. And they can do offline bounce in Pro Tools 11. But you can't really run Pro Tools 11 or higher without swapping your cards for an HDX card. And the swap in my room would cost me $7,000. And iHeartMedia has consistently over the past 3 years told me that is an extravagant expense and they're not going to pay it. So I'm using Pro Tools 10 with no offline bounce, which means when I have 10 minutes worth of sweeps to bounce out, I am getting up and I'm walking around the room and I'm walking around the studios and I'm saying hi to everybody and I'm coming back in 10 minutes and my file's done.
So I'm going to make the assumption it also means you're not doing hour-plus-long mix shows in Pro Tools.
No. Well, yes and no, because here's the flip side of all this. I use Pro Tools for main imaging. I use Adobe for recording things, and I have it set up so they're separate machines with separate feeds, so I can record off the air if I need to while I'm producing on Pro Tools, or I can record something on a timer with Adobe while I'm working in Pro Tools, and that keeps me multitasking at all times. I also use Ableton Live for a lot of custom intros and beat mixy type things that are considered radio imaging. And I also have Logic. It doesn't come out very often, but when I have a big piece, like when they send me stems in Logic, I'll use that versus somebody that's using Pro Tools stems. And 90% of the time I'm getting Pro Tools stems. Now for the mix show, it's a little different. I'm mixing from my laptop, my personal laptop, which you can probably see on djgoofywhitekid.com, is orange and has my logo etched into it, and it's badass, and that's the only reason I mentioned it.
Nice.
I will mix out of Serato. I'm using Serato Scratch Live. Serato DJ is the other option right now, but I haven't really made the switch yet, just because stability is key for me. I'll mix from that through a Rain 62 mixer with real turntables in real time, back out of that mixer into Serato because it has a recording function. That'll record as an AIF. And then when I'm done with all eight or however many mixes I need to do for the week, I'll pull those files into Pro Tools and edit them down for length. And I'll do that on the laptop. So it's literally walking out of my home studio. This is all done at home, by the way. Walking out of my home studio, putting my iLock in my laptop, importing the tracks into a Pro Tools session and cutting them up on my couch while my cat yells at me.
Yeah.
and then from there, I'm bouncing them out and they're just an upload from there. And even funnier, I'll sometimes, just for ease of editing's sake, when I put together the hosted version, which is not hosted by me, but is hosted by Rat Boy and Stay Puft, formerly of Q102 in Philly, when I get their dry breaks, I'll go back into Audition and edit their version with the mixes that I've exported from Pro Tools, just simply because it's a little faster for me to do that than wait for an offline bounce and to, you know, really mess with automation in Pro Tools versus messing with it in Adobe. It's a little faster for me. I could be entirely off on that, but that's the method that I've used.
Whatever works for you. Who cares?
It is. It doesn't freaking matter, man. If it's good coming out of the speakers, you can use whatever you need to.
All right, on to the voiceover side of the game, as we are damn near an hour and a half in, hour and 15 in, man. That's awesome. You also have the Drew the Voice Guy website, drewthevoiceguy.com website that I mentioned earlier on. You already mentioned you're the voice of a station in, that was Chicago's Kiss that you had actually brought up, but
yeah,
you're voicing, I don't know, ballpark it. What kind of stuff do we hear you on?
I am on... Well, I'm on 17, 18 stations. I have two. I actually have two startups to voice after this, so I don't know if I can talk about those yet.
Okay. But well, you don't have to get yourself fired, but...
No. It's not even that. It's just I don't know what the status is of those yet, and I don't know if they want it public or not. That's the other thing. Like, people don't know I'm here because I don't make such a big deal. I'm not buying ads on All Access. You know, I'm not, you know, on the radio boards. I'm not on the VO boards. I'm not hitting people up on Facebook going, hey, put me on. You know, this has all kind of been organic. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think I'm at 17 or 18 stations right now, which is not a huge number compared to a Diego or a Cousin Deke who's on 100 plus at this point.
Right.
But, you know, it's enough to make it worth my time and it's fun to do.
Without a doubt. And, I mean... 17 is a good, that's a respectable number. That's enough to let you know you have value and you should be doing it.
Yeah. And the big ones, FLZ, obviously.
Yeah.
Kiss Chicago, I already mentioned, and those guys are awesome. I love them. Kiss Boston as well. Channel 933 in San Diego with Malcolm producing me, which is a ton of fun to do because his scripts are always so awesome and so crazy. Z104 in Madison. I just cut some stuff for them today, so we can talk about them. And not a ton of other... Oh, The Party in Denver. I just signed The Party in Denver.
95.7?
95.7 with Roger Keeler producing some of that. So that's been fun to do also. I'm going to have to make a trip up there and see him at some point here soon.
I would acquire the Keeler final mixes as soon as possible if it were me. I'd love to hear what he would do. Yeah. He's one of my faves. So obviously, I knew you were voicing imaging. On that side of the world, have you spent a lot of time? Because I mean, you have so much going on. Are you able to put a lot of time into, you know, the commercial side, industrial side, any other side of the voiceover world?
Not really. And part of that is just me not really. It's a time factor. I have the show, and that eats up a good 8 to 10 hours a week. I have the existing clients and they build every, I've been very fortunate that they build every, you know, 2 or 3 months. And I don't have an agent. I don't have, you know, a ton of money to sink into that specifically that's earmarked for that, for example.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't really hang out on Voice 123 or I don't think I'm in Voice Bank. I've done one or two things. I've done auditions for TV stuff every once in a while. Didn't really land anything. I've got one TV project that I'm kind of half working on right now, but I think it may not happen, so I don't want to really talk too much about that.
No, that's fine.
But I've done stuff outside of the normal radio imaging VO stuff. For a while, I did some club spots on the side for somebody that produces club spots and commercials. I've done... one or two animation character voices for some projects that really weren't huge, you know?
Yeah.
And DJs, once they find out that you're a voice guy too, they ask you for drops, and I've done several packages of those.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing major though. Like nothing that I could go, hey, you heard me on Discovery, Destination America, things like that. Nothing like that.
Yeah, no. I just like to cover all the bases. If there's one area, and we can talk globally, grandly now, not just on the voice side, but if there's one area of media or music, you know, mixing, production, whatever, that you're not currently working in, but you'd like to get your hands in, is there anything that stands out to you?
Well, actually, I can give you three. The first one, I would love to do, and I know everybody that voices things says this, I would love to get into television. I would love to get into, not on camera, obviously, but off camera, narration, for example. Like, I did an audition for a long-form narration for a reality show, and that was actually one of the most fun things I've ever done. Mm-hmm. I would love to do that mm-hmm. type of thing. That's one. Number two is I kind of want to get back into video for two reasons. One, it was fun when I was doing it, but two, we had a video director come on board in 2011 or 2012 here at FLZ, and all he does is video day in, day out. He's not a radio guy. He's a video guy. We hired him at a radio station to produce videos, and he's been, one, a rock star, and two, a very, very valuable resource for me to understand how that world works.
Yeah.
Before he came, I was doing the intro videos for our local jingle balls. I was doing small productions, not anything super crazy, not using After Effects or anything, but really, you know, stuff to get us by until we had somebody that actually knew what they were doing. And now I have somebody that knows what he's doing and can teach me that stuff. And it seems like a whole different world. And I know, just listening to the audio on some of these video things that I hear all the time, that that's probably something that I could transition to pretty quickly and have a little bit of a leg up in.
Mm-hmm.
So that's number two. And the third thing is, honestly, I would like to have more time to produce music, to actually produce full-on remixes like I used to.
Yeah.
It's just that's a time suck that I and my little OCD mind, when it comes to producing, I would probably need a lot more time than I have right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I just don't have it, you know. I don't have it.
And then what about original compositions? I mean, is that something you want to get into?
Eventually, yeah. The real thing is it's much more difficult to do that, I think, than it is to do a straight up remix of a song where you kind of already know where you want to go with it.
Yeah.
And those things, and you know, there's some of that, but it's just a time suck, and it really comes down to the time involved.
Yeah.
I'm not doing any of it right now because there's no time for it. And if I had the time, I probably would, but it's not there. It's just not there. And that's the thing. It's really sad that I've put all this work onto myself with my 17 titles that I don't necessarily have time to do something that I want to do, but that's kind of the way it works. It's mm-hmm. I can't really look at anybody else for that. It's all on me.
Well, man, this has been great. The final question, sure. You can answer this however you want. I would just say, generally speaking, you know, kind of across everything you do and dealing with all the different types of people with whom you deal, you know, what is the one trait that somebody should focus on in order to gain success for themselves, especially a young up-and-comer?
Just be a cool dude. Like, I know it's really not an answer, but be a cool dude, meaning don't burn bridges. And that people say that, but I mean, really, don't burn bridges. Make sure that you're treating everybody with the respect and the amount that they deserve. And maybe some a little more than the respect that they deserve, even if it's in the back of your mind, they don't deserve any or very little. I've learned that lesson the hard way a couple times, especially being here at FLZ and interacting with people above me.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you just have to kind of be a cool dude and take things in stride, even if they hurt. Get a thick skin and deal with it. I'm a big fan of people like Mark Cuban and Gary Vaynerchuk, for example, at VaynerMedia. Those guys are successful, and they're in positions where they don't have to give a crap what they say to you about you. They'll just give you the straight up truth. And when you do that, sometimes the truth is going to hurt, and it's for your own good, so you know where your strengths and weaknesses are, and you know what to fix. That's why they're doing it. Yeah. It's not always coming from a position of maliciousness. You have to remember that. Sometimes it will be, and you got to learn to, you know, roll with the punches like that. But having a very strong political mind on that side is one of the things that I think if I had had the kind of wherewithal that I have now, mm-hmm. to about 5 or 6 years ago to navigate those kind of waters, I would be in a much better place than I am right now.
Yeah, but you're in a pretty good place. So
I'm doing okay.
You're doing okay, man.
I'll also say this. Yeah, I do want to say this too. I was once told by a pretty famous music producer that your style is made up of the things you don't know.
Hmm.
And I think that's really profound. So don't feel like if you don't know something, there's a list of things in your mind that you want to learn. Don't feel like you have to learn them all at once, because some of that stuff, limiting the toolkit, for example, is not necessarily a bad thing. That'll make you stand out versus other people. And that doing things that are different from the way other people do them, dissect them if you need to, learn from them, but do them your own way. I think that's kind of something that people get lost in when people compare DAWs and plugins and things.
Mm-hmm.
Your style is made up of the stuff that you don't know. Use that to your advantage.
Absolutely. Well, Drew Hall, you're the man. I appreciate all the time. I knew we'd have a cool chat, and I liked all the theory we talked. I liked hearing all the different sides of your life. I learned a bit about the mixing industry. So it was definitely well worth the time. I just want to say thank you so much.
Hey, man, thanks for having me on. It's been a blast. Love the show.
Let's lock her up. Thanks again to Drew Hall. Appreciate it so much. DrewTheVoiceGuy.com, DJGoofyWhiteKid.com. He's on Twitter under both of those names as well. I know he's on Facebook. Maybe if you're cool, he'll add you as a friend. If not, suck it. I'm his friend. Just kidding. As far as the pod, I was going to mention this. People listen to podcasts in so many different ways. And now that Android is by far and away the most used platform, I mean, there's still tons of iPhone users, don't get me wrong, I get it. Whenever they release an app, even though it might even be damn near double the Android users now that there are iOS users, they always release the app on iPhone first, then they get around to making an Android version. I don't fully understand that. But anyway, all that is to say, I don't know what the heck they have on iPhone short of iTunes. There might be plenty of other podcasting apps that people love. I don't know. But I know in the rest of the world, there are a billion different apps that technically can grab RSS feeds from podcasts. I finally found one that I really like. So if you've been looking for one, or if you haven't found one you love, it's called Podcast Addict. It just has all the features. It's got them all. It's got everything. Like even TuneIn was really good. And it was good at finding shows and saving them, but the search wasn't great, and it was a little jumbled as far as, you know, what's an artist, what's a show, what's an episode, I don't know, an album sometimes. It was just a little weird. As far as for podcasting, Podcast Addict seems to do it, and it was happy for me. Mine is not a large podcast. In the industry, yes, it is. It's, you know, everybody's at this point heard of it, if not listen to it. But in the world, I'm nothing. I'm a speck. So I did a search, I believe, for producers podcast, and I think I was the first or second result. So that's a good sign. Something about it, search engine works on my behalf. Anyway, if you're looking for a good Android app, just wanted to throw it out there, Podcast Addict. It's the one that I like. And every single podcast that I've tried to get or subscribe to or download, you can stream or download, and it has automatic settings. It's got everything you'd want. Every single one I've tried to find has been easy to find. It's not like I had to sift through pages of results just to finally get the thing I was looking for. So there you have it. And again, I'll just reiterate, if anybody has suggestions on how I can encode my audio to make it or leave the quality good enough to play stereo audio, but get the file sizes a lot smaller. I mean, I understand the different, you know, the ways to throttle down on an MP3. I'm not going to 8-bit, I'm going to tell you that much. I'm not going to mono unless I remove demos from the show. Whatever, just shoot me your suggestions or advice if you'd like to. RyanDreen@gmail.com is easy, or on my website. That's all. Rachel McGrath is next. Thanks for tuning in. Thank you. Love you. Bye.
Contact the show, contribute your opinions, see additional content, or simply stay connected at producerspodcast.com.